Thank you, choir. Let's hear it for the choir one more time. I just want to say on a personal note, just thank you to Sylvester and his wife Pam for being here. We love being there. Yeah. 21 years ago, I went to go visit a very famous church in Dallas, Texas, and Sylvester was leading the worship. And I was so moved by the experience, I went up to him and I said, "Hey man, why don't you come and help me start this church up in Elgin?" And he looks at me like, "Who are you?" 6 months later, he was like packing up his family and moved to Chicago and helped us start this church, and it's been awesome. He's a very special person, and so we're grateful to have him. So, happy birthday. It's been 20 years. Seems like just yesterday. Evidently, I had a mullet. Many of you don't know this, but we actually started Westridge from scratch. There were about 10 or 15 of us who were from the area who had this vision for a new church. And so the way that we actually started Westridge was we sent out a bunch of postcards talking about how Westridge was going to be never church as usual. Anybody get that postcard? Yeah, a few of you? All right. We later became known as the Postcard Church, actually. And after we sent them out, we just sat back and we waited because we had no idea whether anybody would even show up or not. But can you believe that on our very first Sunday, on September 28th, 1997, at the Elgin Community College Auditorium, we had 853 people show up our first Sunday. Isn't that crazy? The place was packed out. It was unbelievable. But I wanted to make sure that people understood that this was not a normal, going to be a normal church. I mean, there were like 100 churches in Elgin at the time, and I just wanted to make it very clear that we are starting this church to be different, that we were starting this church to be never church as usual. And so I set out from the very first Sunday talking about what it means to be never church as usual. And so I looked out across the sea of people on that very first Sunday morning and I said, "Look, if you're looking for a place where you can put the pastor up on a pedestal because he is such a great man of God, this is not the place for you." I said, "I am so not that." In fact, at the time, I was just starting back into my relationship with God after having left for many, many years. And so I said, "Look, I may be no Billy Graham, but if you want somebody who's going to walk with you in the journey, even when the road gets bumpy, I'm committed to spending the rest of my life here at Westridge to walk with you where we're all on the same level. No church hierarchy, no church politics, just authentic community." I went home that day, and I felt like I had really nailed it. Until I showed up next Sunday. Because next Sunday, when I showed up, the attendance dropped by half. It was crazy. And so that Sunday, I get up, and I said, "Okay, here we go. If you're looking for a place where the sermon approaches the Bible academically, where the pastor loves to put himself up as the biblical expert and professor and teaching the Greek and Hebrew syntax and all the English derivatives of every word in every verse," I said, "this ain't that place." I said, "because we believe that the Bible is where we encounter God." I said, "it's provided for us by God, not as a textbook, but as a guide, as a roadmap for our lives." And I said, "so, if you're looking for a place that will speak plainly and honestly about the stuff that we struggle with every day and want to understand how the Bible is relevant to your everyday life, then this is the place for you. This is the place to call your church home." The next Sunday, we dropped by another 100. I was starting to get a complex. So the next week, I get up, a little nervous, and I said, "if you're looking for the perfect church, I said, this is not the place for you, because this is a church that is going to be full of messed up, imperfect people. And I said, I'm the most messed up out of anybody. I didn't know how true that was going to be at the time. So I said, but here's what I want you to know. No matter who you are or what you've done, no matter what your skin color is or isn't, no matter how much money you have or you don't have, or how bad you think your sin is, this will be a place that will always accept you. Next Sunday, boom, we dropped again. Can you believe that? Every week, like as it went, the numbers kept getting smaller and smaller. It was almost like Survivor, only people were voting themselves off the island. And those who kept showing up, they go, where did everybody go? Well, the very next Sunday was Time Change Sunday. And back then, we only had one service at 10 a.m. And so we were in the auditorium that morning, and the music team was rehearsing, and we were working through the lights and everything. And so the auditorium was pitch black. You couldn't see a thing. And sure enough, 9 a.m. rolls around. The doors of the auditorium fly open, and this little, sweetest lady comes running in all flustered because she thinks she's late for church when in fact she's an hour early. And so because the auditorium was dark, she really couldn't see anything. And so she hurries up and she grabs a seat. Well, at just that moment, as it turns out, that the band begins to rehearse the worship. And so as they begin to rehearse, she stands up and she starts singing. And she is singing her little heart out. And so after a little bit, she kind of got suspicious as her eyes began to adjust, and she looks around and she realizes she is the only one in the auditorium. But the funny thing is, she just keeps on singing. She was committed. So being the compassionate pastor I am, I'm over in the corner just laughing my butt off because I think the whole thing's funny. But finally, I go over to her and I said, hey, Vicky, I said, how you doing? And she gets this real panicked look on her face. And she looks at me and she says, Pastor, am I the only one left? Well, it never got quite that bad. Close, but not that bad. But let me just tell you, we've come a long way since then. And it's been amazing to see how God has created this beautiful church. From something that has began as just a dream. And we've been through a lot together, and it's been awesome that we've done the journey together through the good times and the bad. But it was really, I have to say, it was this group of people who stuck it out, and after the excitement of the crowds went away and, you know, of the new church thing went away, we ended up with just this group of people who were the most loving, honest, non-traditional people that I could have ever imagined, who just bought into the vision. They got it, and they began to live that out every day of their lives. And let me tell you, I just think that Westridge is the most unique place that I have ever seen, and I'm grateful to be a part of it. I've learned a lot over the last 20 years, and I've been through a lot of mistakes and personal failures, and so over the next few weeks, I just want to talk about some of the lessons that I have learned. And if you're just checking out Westridge for the first time, if you come and you come to every week of this series, I promise you this, by the end of the series, you will know whether or not you want to call this your church home. We might not have but half of you here at the end of the series, but you'll know. It is no secret for those of you who know me that I had issues with the church growing up. I was a pastor's kid, which comes with a lot of baggage. And there came this point in my life where I not only walked away from the church, but I walked away from my relationship with God. And I lived a life of sin, and I lived a life that was blatantly against God. And when I came back to God, there was this point where I was trying to rebuild my faith, and I had this issue. And that was the most incredibly uncomfortable place for me coming back to build my faith was in the church. And it just seemed like every church that I visited just left me cold, and I had no sense of connection. I couldn't identify with the pastor standing up on the stage who seemingly lived a perfect life, and primarily because mine was so jacked up. And the truth is that I was uncomfortable sharing my personal struggles and the things that I was going through because I didn't have a safe place where I felt like I wouldn't be judged if I shared those honest things. And it hit me. If I felt that way, then maybe there's other people that feel the same way. And so 20 years ago, I felt this leading to start this church. And I felt, though, if we were going to start it, it had to somehow be different. Again, there were like 100 churches in Elgin. I wasn't interested in just starting another church. I wanted it to be a church that was never church as usual. And I want to be clear about what that means, the never church as usual thing. It actually means to me that we get back to the biblical model of what the church was set up to be. That the church would be a safe place for anyone of any background to come and explore their faith without judgment. A church that is truly authentic and grace-filled and accepts people as they are. And a church that preaches the unfiltered truth of the Bible, that doesn't couch it in academia, but speaks honestly about the tough things that the Bible says that we sometimes have difficulty accepting, but we'll never back down from the truth of what the Bible teaches, ever. That was what we wanted it to be. And 20 years later, I have to say, as flawed as it is, as imperfect as we are, and as much work as it can be, I think that what we did here at Westridge was as close as you can get. It's been an amazing place. I've since realized that when the church is at its best, it is a place where there is this commitment to each other that says, I will walk with you down the narrow dirt road that leads to Jesus. I will not abandon you in your tough times. I will not abandon you when you screw up and you fall down, but I will be there to help pick you back up and continue to walk with you. And so many have done that with me and so many others in this church. When the church is never church as usual, it never promises to be perfect. It never promises to have all the answers or to always have it all together, but it always promises to stand by your side and says, no matter what it is we're facing, we will face it down together. Westridge is a real church with real people. And we all have real problems that we deal with, real issues. But we serve a real God, and we live in a real world. And there is really no reason to fake it, because we're all in the same boat. We all screw up, we all fail, we all make mistakes, we all fall, but we're all just trying to find our way. When you look at the biblical model of the church, there's a lot of great passages, but one of the passages that stands out for me is a passage that I think hits the nail on the head out of the book of Philippians chapter 2, because it provides us a description for what authentic community really looks like, and I think sometimes we skip past it because it's a beautiful passage, but we skip past the hard work of what it's really talking about. Because the Apostle Paul says, being one in spirit and of one mind, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Do you know how difficult that is? Rather, in humility, value others not equal to you, but what? Above yourselves. And looking not only to your interests, but to each of you to the interest of the others. What this passage is telling me is that in the church, there is no room for ego. And one of the things that I think that we have worked so hard to do here at Westridge is to get the ego out of the church. And you may have noticed that we have structured that in the way that we've even structured this organization as a church, that we don't have a senior pastor here calling the shots. We don't have everything revolving around one person. We have a leadership team of mostly volunteers, including myself, who work very hard at leading the church. And so Greg and I are just one of seven people, and we are frequently outnumbered, outvoted all the time. Greg, a little more than me, by the way. We've also tried to structure our ministries in the same way. And so the music ministry, which can, like, you know, create star mentalities of people being up on stage and great musicians, we have at the helm Michael Okafor, our director, who is unbelievable. What you may not know is that Michael has his master's in percussion, he has his doctorate in musical arts from the University of Kentucky, and he's not up here driving attention to himself saying, look at me and look how great I am, and he could stand up here and do the whole thing himself if he wanted to, but he doesn't. When he derives the most joy, it's when he's in the back. You ever notice? He's in the back of the stage all the time, and he derives most joy from the fact that he is helping young artists develop and grow, and that's the beauty of his ministry. It's not about him. It's not about one person. One of our leadership team members, Lisa Wollenberg, she's a director of a major U.S. corporation. She's like a big dog. And she's, while she's very capable of running this place, she faithfully serves in the kindergarten class every Sunday. And she's been doing that for years. Why? Because that's where the greatest need is. She's been doing it for years. I'm just telling you, nobody is doing this thing for any sense of power or ego. Everyone is doing what we do because we believe in the mission and the vision of this church, that this church is a place that makes a difference. And we seek to drive the ego out of the church every day. As imperfect as it is, Westridge is about as close to being an authentic church as I have ever seen. I see people who are there for each other in their darkest hour. I see people who are comforting each other in their times of loss and sorrow. And I see people who are supporting each other when they are going through the tough times, that they do not abandon each other. And it's all without ego. It's beautiful. This is foundationally the vision that Westridge was built on, that it will never be about me, that it will never be about one person, where the church revolves around one person, but it will always be about helping people encounter, embrace, and embody the radical love of God. And if I were to sum it all up in just one word, I would say it's this: grace. Believe it or not, it is easier for us to approach the Christian faith intellectually or academically. Because if it's all about knowing, then it never has to be about doing. But Jesus, when he taught that it's all about the heart. He taught it's all about what we do. It's all about who we are. It's not about what you know. It's about what's inside that makes a difference. It is a whole lot messier to follow a Jesus who forgives adulterers and sits at dinners with a bunch of sinners. It is very difficult to believe in a Jesus who, as he is dying, forgives a criminal first before he takes his last breath because he couldn't wait to distribute the grace of God among those of us who don't deserve it. Grace is the truth. And grace is what defines this church. I just celebrated my 50th birthday last month. I know. And here's the thing. Like, I don't think I got another 50 in me, right? And as you reflect on your life as you get older, you just start thinking about, like, what it's about. And I have just come to a place in my life where I don't want to waste my time doing things with stuff that has no meaning. I don't want to waste my time on the superficiality of this world. And so for me, this church, what I do here, represents the part of my life that's going to last beyond the grave. This is my sense of purpose and mission. I could build the highest high rise, and it doesn't matter. This is where I derive my sense of purpose. And as I said, I'm just a volunteer here. I don't take any money. I don't do this for any power and ego. I have been humbled here at this church more than you could ever imagine. There's only one reason why I do this. I want to be part of a group of people who get it. People who are driven to make their life count. People who starve for meaning and purpose and wanting to make a difference and are tired of the superficiality of this world and want their life to mean something. And it's because of that that we ferociously protect the mission and the vision of this church. We lost one of my favorite Westridgers this last year. It was a really tough loss for me because I loved her so much. Kaja Kreitz died last month. And you may have seen her around. She was not a quiet person. Kaja had Down syndrome and outlived her life expectancy by at least 20 years or something. And so we feel blessed to have had her. But Kaja was just one of the most beautiful, pure people that I knew who said it exactly the way it is, unfiltered. And so I thought it would be appropriate this morning to close out this message by just sharing with you the story that I told at her funeral. When Kaja was 12, she entered into the Special Olympics. She was very active in the Special Olympics, and she was down in Aurora for a race, and she was there to run. And so all the runners, you know, line up on the line, and boom, they're off running. And I wasn't there, but I was told that Kaja did really well for a while, but halfway through the race, she just stops. She had decided she'd had enough. She's tired, and she wanted to be done. I get that. And if you know Kaja, she was a pretty stubborn little girl. So there she is, just standing in the middle of the track while all the other runners finish the race. Well, her coach yells, "Kaja, come on, honey, run." And she's like, shakes him off. Her family and the rest of the crowd get up and they start yelling and screaming and encouraging her. And then they start chanting her name, "Kaja, Kaja, Kaja." Inspired by the encouragement of the crowd, she decides she could probably finish the run. So she starts to run again, crowd goes wild, she gets near the finish line, she's like really pouring it on, they said you can see it in the look in her face. She's in last place. There are no runners left in the race, but you'd have thought that she was just setting a world record. As she crosses the finish line, she throws her little arms up and she breaks through the tape like a true champion. The crowd goes wild and the family rushes the field. And the next thing you know, there's Kaja standing up on the awards box. Everybody's crying and as they bring out this big, beautiful medal and they hang it around her neck and called her a champion. Incredible, isn't it? That is a picture of the church. The Bible says that the race of life is really, really hard. And there's going to be many times when you're going to feel like stopping right in the middle of the track. There's going to be times when we fall down and we feel like we cannot get back up. But that's when the church steps in. That's when the church starts chanting your name and helps you to find the inspiration to finish. See, our mission as a church is not to be big. It's not to be great. It's that when somebody who is standing there in the darkest moment of their life and they feel like they can't move on, that we're there for them. And we walk with them. And we find people who are lost and we find people who are hurting and people who just need Jesus. And we help each other and we scrape and we struggle together in this world so that we can make it to the end and we can limp across the finish line of this life together. Here's the truth. We may be a bunch of messed up people here at Westridge. I'm the biggest one of them. And I'm pretty sure we don't have a shot that when it comes into the heavenly realms in the ranking that we're not going to be first. But the good news of the gospel is this, that even if we come in dead last and the track is empty and there's nobody left and we're just struggling just to make it to the finish line down that dirt path that leads us to Jesus, that all of heaven will cheer you in and say, well done. Because Jesus said, the first will be last, but the last will be first. And on that day, when you cross the finish line of this life, you're going to hear a little voice of Kaja, who is now downs free, saying, hey, Westridge is over here. Look, it's been an incredibly wild ride over the last 20 years. And I just want to say thank you. That in spite of my mistakes and flaws and personal failures, that y'all have stood by me, that you have accepted me, and that you have loved me as I am. And I will be forever grateful. There is no place I'd rather be than right here with all of you for the rest of my life. Here's to the next 20 years.